Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to the Friday edition of The Jungle. My name is Jim Rome. All right, what's going on? Welcome to the program. Nice to have you here. Big, big Friday show. Lots to get done. Let's get after it. Why don't we start this morning with the way I ended last night on Twitter? I'm going to start the show today the way I ended the night on social, by asking, now, will you respect Philip Rivers? Now, will you respect Philip Rivers? Because if you don't now, then you should stop watching football. Honestly, just go find something else to do. Because if you did not come away from that game respecting Philip Rivers and the Chargers, then you're wasting your time and you're wasting my time too. I mean, sure, if you're a Chiefs fan, it probably pissed you off to see him waving to you as he jogged off the field. Except for one thing, he earned that. He more than earned that. And your problem should not be with Rivers talking some junk after ripping your heart out in your house. It's about your team not finishing. It's about your team not being able to hold on to a 2-touchdown lead in the fourth quarter. In a game you had to have, in a game that would have wrapped up that division, and in a game that would have gone a long way towards locking up the top seed in the conference. Now that's your issue. I mean, I don't know. Maybe Rivers waving goodbye did not piss you off. But if that didn't, I'm guessing the Charger Twitter account busting out with the Chargers haven't beaten anyone good in the mocking SpongeBob font probably did. It's a strong tweet. That Twitter feed had itself a day. And they earned it. They earned it. Because that 29-28 win over the Chiefs in Kansas City was badass. The type of game that the Chargers and Rivers traditionally have not won. But he and they man the hell up, just as they have all year long. You see, they're different now. And in large part, they're different because he's different. Now, I'll give you this. He and they did not look so different when that game started. Not when Phil was splitting the opposition's numbers on his very first pass.
They bring Virgil Green, the tight end, in motion, left to right. Back to throw Rivers, throwing deep over the middle. And the pass is going to be intercepted at midfield. It's picked off by Steven Nelson. And Philip Rivers, who's only thrown 6 picks all season, makes a mistake and the Chiefs pick it off at midfield.
Chiefs radio. It was hard not to think. Uh-oh, here we go again. Chargers in KC, Phil in KC, this is what he and they do. Second play of the game, he's picked off. KC comes down to score on a Pat Mahomes TD pass. Moments later, the Chargers were punting again, and again that was followed by a Patrick Mahomes TD pass. And before you blink, LA's down 14-0, and it looks like a boat race. It looked like the team that had won 9 straight was going to make it 10. And they were going to do it going away. And the eggs were out on Twitter, killing Rivers and the Bolts. You know, same old, same old. The more things change, the more they stay exactly the same. And the Chargers still were not ready for prime time. Or were they? Now look, I'm not going to lie. I took the Chiefs. I laid the points in this one. And at 14-0, it looked like it was going to be easy money. But the Bolts obviously did not get that memo. And instead of lying down and accepting that beatdown, they fought back 14-7. Then they were on the verge of tying it at the end of the half. Not only were they not getting blown out, they were exactly where they wanted to be. Until this happened.
Newsom to his left, Rivers to throw, moves to his right, fires it late for the end zone. It's going to be intercepted. Kendall Fuller in the back of the end zone. It's picked off. Kendall Fuller with an athletic play, picking Rivers for the second time tonight, this time in the back near corner of the end zone.
So once again, that's Arrowhead Phil. You know, a great player who's had some bad games, made some bad decisions, and really struggled at times in that stadium. And right there, that was one of the bad decisions. But it wasn't just Phil. Look, I said it here yesterday. That was the game of the year because those were the two best teams in the AFC. Not the Patriots, not the Steelers, who were going to play each other this weekend. But this one. But then again, at times, that game was sloppy, in part because both teams were banged up and it was a short week. But execution was not exactly at an elite level. But I'll tell you who brought their A game. You know who brought their A game? The referees. They brought their A game. These guys were in postseason form. Short week for the refs? Child, please. Maybe these guys have all been napping it out in Tom Brady's recovery PJs because these dudes were playing through it. All of it. I don't know if they took the spike before the game, but they muscled through the pain and the stiffness in their flag-throwing shoulders. They were spraying them all over the yard. I mean, damn, have you ever seen so many defensive holding calls? Were these dudes getting paid by the flag? Hey, old dudes, just because the teams are not playing well does not mean you need to make it about you. We're still not tuning in to see you. No one is paying their hard-earned dough to watch you jam your face in front of the camera over and over and over again. And even worse than them making it about them and over-officiating the hell out of that game was the fact that they completely disappeared when Rivers took a headshot on that final drive. This guy's being tackled from behind, giving himself up, takes a shot to the dome, and there's nothing from the refs. The guys who could not wait to call anything and everything a few minutes earlier, but had no flags for that.
Ruling on the field stands.
It stands.
Ruling on the field stands.
But as much as the refs seem to want to make this about them, it really was about Philip Rivers, the guy who trailed the Steelers by 16 a few weeks back and came back to win. The guy who trailed the Chiefs by 14, not once, not twice, but three times last night. The same guy who had lost nine straight to Kansas City and had struggled in Kansas City. The same guy who went into that game without Melvin Gordon. You see, this is why I respect this guy so much and his toughness. I've been banging the Rivers drum for a long time, saying that he does not get nearly the respect he deserves on the national stage. However, even I thought that going into KC without his top two running backs was too much, especially against a KC pass rush. And for much of the game, that's how it looked. Especially after losing Keenan Allen early in that game. It's a lot of production on the sideline in a game they had to have if they wanted to win that division. And at that point, most teams are shutting it down and getting ready for next week. But not the Bolts, not Rivers. He kept battling, led them on an 11-play drive. That made it 28-21, less than 4 minutes to go. Then the Charger defense comes up with a monster stop on third down. They force a punt. One thing about that defense, too. Quick word about the defense. They held Kansas City to a season-low 8 possessions. That's going to get lost in what Rivers did. But the Chargers' defense more than held up their end of the bargain. If you want to sleep on them, you go right ahead. I'm not going to. Chargers get the ball back at their 40. 2:37 left. Down by 7. Then they get called for holding. First and 20. And here we go again. Rivers having to march through his personal house of horrors without his star receiver, without his star running back, and his star running back's backup. Start with that 31-yard pass to Travis Benjamin. Then the drive stalls. Then it's 4th and 7 at the KC 36. Now the game is on the line. The division is on the line. Possible home field throughout the playoffs on the line. Alvey, roll the hell out of this.
Rivers in the shotgun, takes a snap. This is the game. Middle of the field, has Travis Benjamin, breaks a tackle. 10, dropped at the 9. Philip Rivers puts it on his mark, and Travis Benjamin hauls it in.
Show me your lightning bolt. Chargers radio. Holy crap, how did that guy get that ball in there? The coverage could not have been any better, and he still got it in there. He could not have run out and handed the ball to Benjamin in a better spot. So, let me pick it up really quickly. I mean, there's so much to talk about, but then we have that comical no call on the helmet-to-helmet, the possible makeup call on a PI in the end zone, and then you have this.
Rivers in the shotgun. Looks to the right for Mike Williams. Throws to Mike Williams. Caught! Touchdown! Touchdown, Chargers! Mike Williams with his third of the day.
That's a tie game, right? Phil thought it was. He told NFL Network he expected to take the PAT and go into overtime, but that's not what happened. Quote, Coach Lynn said, let's go win it right now.
Shotgun snap. Rivers rolls to the right, throws to the end zone. Caught! It's good! It's good! Mike Williams with the grab! Chargers lead 29-28.
Hey, KC, way to have a man within 50 feet of him. Incredible. Solid brass call. Solid brass execution. Except not for my man Anthony Lynn. He didn't think it was complicated at all.
Well, we didn't come here to tie. We came here to win. And so to me, it was a no-brainer.
Bam. Have some. The Chargers never even blinked. They go into KC, a place where they've struggled for years, and they come out with one of their best wins ever. Literally. That's why Philip Rivers deserves MVP run. That's why Anthony Lynn deserves Coach of the Year run. And let me say this. Hear me now. Understand me later. Hear me right now. Understand me later. The road to Atlanta could very well go through Carson and LA. I said it before, I'll say it again right now. Los Angeles is now the center of the football universe. Take that, haters. Super Chargers! Can you imagine that thing going through Carson? It could go through Carson. How about both championship games here in SoCal? Not bad for a community that did not have the NFL for two decades plus. Man, that was brass. That is an unbelievable win for a guy in a team that traditionally has not won that game. That was solid. Chiefs fans, you could not wait to come in here and burn this place to the ground. You blew a 2-touchdown lead in the fourth quarter, late in the fourth quarter. This email starts it off. Dear Rome, double-digit lead blown. Check. Embarrassing defensive mistake to end the game. Check. Home loss to an underdog. Check. I would say the Chiefs are ready for the playoffs. Casey, New Hampshire, Chiefs honk, 40-year-old Super Bowl virgin. It was all supposed to be different this year, wasn't it? The Chargers definitely are different. We are efforting Ray Leonard. Ray Leonard is one of my favorite fighters ever. Ray Leonard is one of my favorite athletes ever because of the heart that he would demonstrate. In fact, we have found him, an Olympic gold medalist, a six-time world champion, fighter of the decade for the 1980s, founder of the Sugar Ray Leonard Foundation. He is a member of the Boxing Hall of Fame. He is an analyst with DAZN. Canelo v. Rocky, tomorrow night, 8 p.m. live from Madison Square Garden on DAZN. Sugar Ray Leonard is my guest. Ray, it's been a moment or two. It's great to have you on the show. Ray, how are you?
Jim, Jesus Christ, how long has it been, bro?
Too long, Right? Definitely too long. How you feeling?
Mean,
how are things?
Does that mean we're getting older?
Or we are, Ray.
More responsible?
Ray, I don't know about you. I'm getting older, less responsible. But, Ray, you look great, though. You look great. I think you're not getting older. I know I am.
No, it's more exterior than interior.
Gotcha. All right, so you got Canelo and Rocky tomorrow night. But before we talk about that fight, Ray, talk to me for a minute about Madison Square Garden. As a fighter, what goes through you when you hear those three words, Madison Square Garden, and what does the arena mean to the sport overall?
The first thing that comes to mind is Mecca of boxing. I mean, it's the place to be. You know, if you haven't fought in Madison Square Garden, you have not been a fighter. For the most part. But, you know, I think I fought there. I don't recall what happened. I don't want to recall what happened because I think I lost. I don't know what fight that was.
I think, Ray, that was your fight with Terry Norris, right?
I don't remember.
I got you. I remember that fight. That was something else. But, yeah, it is the Mecca. It's where everybody wants to be. So, I mean, when you look at the big picture for the sport, Ray, we're a few weeks removed now from Wilder Fury, and now we've got this fight tomorrow night. It feels like it is a huge moment for boxing. As a fan of the sport, does it feel that way to you? Does it feel like we're at the start of something special once again in boxing?
Well, you know, what's happening now is that these fights that, like, we look upon as, like, you know, just for sure, this guy's going to win. It's 50-1, it's 100-1. That this guy can't beat, whether it's Wilder, you know, and that was a good indication, too, because I'm one of them, I just felt that it would be maybe a couple rounds and Wilder would knock him out, Tyson Fury. All of a sudden, I saw a different person, fighter, in that ring with Tyson Fury. He got up the last knockdown, I thought he was, like, out, dead. And he got back up somehow, some way. Very interesting fight, very interesting to score. I gave Fury a slight edge. But then again, that happens to all fighters, especially if we are the top-notch favorite. We go into that ring. We're in shape, but psychologically, mentally, we're not there. And that's what happens to most champions, for the most part.
We're talking to Ray Leonard. You have Canelo and Rocky tomorrow night, 8 p.m. live from Madison Square Garden on DAZN. You can get DAZN by signing up for free. You know, Ray, when you talk about what makes a great champion, what it takes to be a great fighter, Canelo is very, very, very good. In your mind, does he have what it takes to be great?
Yes, he does. He's a young man. And, you know, when I saw him against, Floyd Mayweather Jr., I said it's going to be a teacher and a student, and Canelo being a student. He put up a good fight, the best he could, against a great fighter in Floyd Mayweather Jr. And that, you know what, and no one likes to lose, but you know what, that made him a better fighter.
Sugar and Leonard joining us. We're talking about Rocky and Canelo. What about Rocky, Ray? The thing about Rocky is he's largely unknown here. He is an underdog. Now, you used to fight, and you were used to the spotlight. You were always there, and you would thrive in those situations. But if you're a guy like Rocky, and you're not used to the kind of media attention that he's getting, what kind of advice would you give him before a fight of this magnitude?
I spoke with him yesterday, Rocky, and he seemed pretty composed. I mean, this is huge. Huge, especially for him. But he seems to be pretty, you know, calm. But you don't know that, and he won't know that until he enters that ring. And when he feels the energy and the whole attitude thing and power of Canelo, it's gonna be an eye opener. We just have to see how he reacts to that. He's a tall guy. He's a really tall guy. Heavier guy, stronger guy, but let's see if he, you know, the question is, can he use that? Will he use that? Will he take his time? Will he use his height and reach advantage? Make him harder to hit.
We're talking to Ray Leonard. You know, Ray, he's got that advantage in height, in reach. He actually towers over Canelo. You know, let me change up on you for 1 minute. There was this piece in the Wall Street Journal in October that was really powerful, and it was a story about from the time when you were 10 years old, and some friends were near a roaring creek in Maryland.
Oh, my God.
Ray, what happened next for those who do not know that story?
I was, you know, I lived in Maryland at the time, and there was a creek right near the McDonald's restaurant. And I remember going over there after a big rainstorm, the place, and because the creek had flooded. And me and my boys, and I'm like 10, maybe 11, and we walked on the side because it was just fun at that time. I slipped and fell into the water, into the creek. And the current was just strong, pushing down towards the drain. I couldn't swim. I couldn't swim, but I could survive, and I kept fighting. I pulled myself up at times, and then I heard the roar of the water, the power of that water, and I never gave up, Jim. It's so weird. I mean, I can hear the water right now, because when I talk about it, it's like it brings back memories that I fought to stay alive. And somehow, some way, by the grace of God, I pulled myself up and looked down, way down the field, which is like the size of a football field, and saw all these people. And that was where I fell in. And I walked towards them, and this man saw me, and he picked me up and on his shoulders and took me over to my parents, who were just going, I mean, they were crying. Everyone was crying. And man, it was awful. It was awful. Even today, I can swim now, naturally, but I don't really like water. I love water. I like water, but I don't love water.
course, Ray, it's terrible. You were 10 years old. You nearly lost your life. You nearly drowned. And you mentioned that you just kept fighting. You kept fighting. You kept fighting. And when I think about you and I think about your career, I mean, this is the way it was. There were times where you were beaten in the ring, yet you seemed to have this reserve. You could always tap into a reserve that, I don't know, I didn't think it was necessarily there. I think about the late rounds. And remember, for people listening, you fought into later rounds when they still fought rounds 13 through 15.
Rounds.
Right.
Yeah.
Against Thomas Hearns when it seemed like you had nothing left. How were you able to tap into a reserve like that when it looked like you had nothing left?
You know what Muhammad Ali said to me many, many years ago, prior to those fights you're talking about? He said, Ray, you know, when I fought Joe Frazier, it was like the closest thing to death. And I looked at him kind of strange. And I found out what he meant through fighting Tommy Hearns, especially in the first fight in 81. Duran in June of 80, Marvin Hagler, Wilfred Benitez, it was there when you reached down in that intestinal fortitude. You reached down for that thing that we all have. We all possess it. We just can't activate it. And that's the difference.
So, Ray, when you talk about those fights, I mean, Benitez was an amazing fighter. Hagler obviously goes without saying. Thomas Hearns, a Hall of Famer. Duran, who you made quit. You know, as I look back on your career, there were so many amazing moments. If I had to ask you to pick one, what is the moment you were most proud of in the ring?
You know, and you're right. I mean, they were significant. But the one that comes to mind is Tommy Hearns, the unification of the welterweight crown. September of, 81. Tommy, I mean, my left eye was closed. It was like over 100 degrees in the ring. My arms tied. Everything was tied, but somehow, some way, I hit him. I caught him. And I just... It was like an adrenaline shot. It was adrenaline. It was like a, I don't know, something happened, and it's hard to really, really articulate it, but it's something special. Again, we all have. And when I heard an opponent, I have this thing that clicks on automatically. It clicks on. It turns on, I should say.
Boy, Ray, Tommy Hearns, he might not have been able to box like you could box, but his punching power was unbelievable. What was it like to get hit by that man?
You know what? I tell you, Jim, I'm glad you asked the question. Tommy never hurt me in the first fight. He never hurt me in the first fight. Second fight, he hurt me numerous times. First fight, I mean, I don't know. Because if you go back and watch the fight, and the tape of the fight, you'll see the first round I was moving. Because prior to the first bell, I looked around the ring. I walked around the ring, and I said, all right, who in here could beat Tommy Hearns? And you know who it was? I saw Muhammad Ali.
Hmm.
And I moved like Muhammad Ali the first, second round. And Tommy was missing. He couldn't connect. And then I touched him on the forehead just before the bell rang. And he hit me in retaliation. But that meant he was angry. He was mad. And that's where I wanted to take him. I choreographed my fights in my head as they're taking place.
Ray Leonard joining us for another moment or so. Ray, the thing that you were ahead of your time, you look at Conor McGregor. Conor McGregor is, he's won so many fights by getting under guys' skin and getting in their heads. You were able to do this. I mean, you took one of the toughest guys ever in Roberto Duran and made him quit. What about that mental warfare? How many times did you think you would want to fight before you even stepped between the ropes?
I learned that from Duran. I learned how to get into the head from Duran.
Hmm.
I mean, he taught me.
That's irony.
He was my teacher in our first fight. And that was in June of 80 in Montreal. And because he took me out of my game plan, and I stood toe-to-toe, although I had the hand speed and the foot movement to outmaneuver him because of the things he said to me and to my wife. And I couldn't get back at him because he didn't, at that time, he wasn't speaking English. He taught me something, and I used that against other guys.
Boy, Ray, everything's changed so much, right? I mean, you're still a boxing fan. You're still associated with the sport. Let me finally ask you this. What do you make? And again, we're close in age. We came up at the same time. How about a world where Oscar De La Hoya and Dana White are going back and forth through the media, and then Oscar finally said, look, if you want to get in the ring, man, I'll take care of it that way. What do you make of the battle between the two of these guys, the beef they're having right now?
Well, I'm not too privy upon the specifics of that, but I've heard through the grapevine. But hey, you know what? MMA, I mean, it's huge. It's huge. I mean, a lot of my friends are fans of boxing and also that. Just keep it going, you know what? It's entertainment. And the fact that when Mayweather fought McGregor.
Yep.
I just knew that at some point that early on that he would get tired because it's a different type of conditioning with, you know, going five rounds or going 5 minute rounds or whatever and going 12 rounds or 15 rounds. And it was like the fourth, fifth round. And I looked over at McConnell and he was not, you know, he was winded. But it was impressive and entertaining that he went that far. And then at some point, Mayweather looked at me and winked because I was doing the commentary there. And it was entertaining. It was a spectacle.
It was. Exactly. That's exactly what it was. It was a spectacle, and it went 10 rounds. So you've got Canelo and Rocky tomorrow night, 8 p.m. live, Madison Square Garden, on DAZN. You can get DAZN by signing up for free. Ray Leonard is an Olympic gold medalist and a Hall of Famer, a six-time world champ. You know, Ray, I could do this all day long. So good to get caught up. Ray, I appreciate you.
Thanks, Jim.
Let's go to the phones on this Friday. We go to Buffalo. Mike in Buffalo. It's good to have you, Mike. How are you?
I'm very good, but I tell you what. My name is Mike Tyson. I'm Mike Tyson.
Mike Tyson.
How are you, Mr. Radio Man?
Mike Tyson. This is absolutely incredible. No way, Mike. What are you doing in Buffalo, and why are you calling me?
Well, I tell you what. You had my name in your mouth yesterday, and I'm actually sparring because I'm going to make a comeback.
That's not a good call. No. You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
You know, if I was one of those guys who did lame poll questions on Twitter, like so many other guys, I would just post this right away. Worst impression ever, yes or no? And that's coming from somebody who's not good at impressions. That guy was Mike Tyson? That guy pretended to be Mike Tyson. Did that sound like Mike Tyson? So if I were one of those guys who did extremely lame poll questions on Twitter, that poll question would be, worst impression ever, yes or no? Yes or yes? Yes or definitely? Yes or hell yes? What's more lame, poll questions or that guy's Mike Tyson impression? Yes or hell yes? Man, that was terrible. When did the show become the gong show? Man, just pick up the phone and call the program and have a take and make sure that take does not suck. Is this some kind of talent show? Hey, come on up here and do your impressions. Come up here and do a parody. Come up here and sing a song. Come up here and do some trick. Who am I, Chuck Barris? Well, man, that was horrible. Who thinks to themselves, I think I'll call Rome and pretend to be Mike Tyson. Yeah, Mr. Rome? Does this guy sound like Mike Tyson?
I'm very good, but I tell you what. My name is Mike Tyson. I'm Mike Tyson.
Mike Tyson.
How are you, Mr. Radio Man?
Mike Tyson. This is absolutely incredible.
Mr. Radio Man.
Mike?
Mr. Radio Man. Hey, are you Mike Tyson or Hector Camacho? Hector Camacho actually hit me with a Mr. DJ Man, not a Mr. Radio Man. God, that was so awesome. When I interviewed Camacho prior to his fight with Chavez, and I felt that it was my job to let Camacho know that he was going to lose that fight, his response, I would give anything to have the audio. His response, he probably Stucknuts got the audio or Drew in West LA. His response when I said to him, you know what I think, Hector? I think you're going to lose that fight. In fact, I think Chavez is going to knock you out. And don't ask me why, as a young radio host, I felt the need to share my opinion with the guy that I was interviewing, but I did. And I said, and Camacho, he was such a colorful character. He was awesome. I said, you're going to get knocked out. Chavez is going to knock you out. And his response was, and I quote, oh yeah? How about I come down there right now and knock you out, Mr. Radio Man?
How are you, Mr. Radio Man?
No, actually, Mr. DJ Man. He called me a DJ. Mr. DJ Man. And I think my response was, I don't think I would like that very much at all.
Mr. Boxing Man, but he hung up. How about I come down there and knock you out right now, Mr. DJ Man? And then for whatever reason, years after the fact, this is when I was still at 690 AM in San Diego, he was at the building. I mean, why Hector Camacho was at the building, I have no idea, but he was at the building and I came and found him. I said, Macho, I'm Mr. DJ Man. He laughed. He thought it was great. This tweet is from Chris in St. Pete. Quote, worst call, worst impression ever. Give him a brown ticket to the hack-off. The hack-off is for guys like that. The worst of the worst. A straight hack. That was a terrible impression and a terrible call and a terrible take. And the hack-off was made for people like that. If I had a hack-off, that guy would be in it. Mike in Buffalo. Master Bass tweets, war Mike Tyson transforming himself into a grandma from Brooklyn. Let me ask you this. Does this sound like Mike Tyson or does this sound like a grandma from Brooklyn?
How are you, Mr. Radio Man? Well, I tell you what. You had my name in your mouth yesterday.
That does sound more like a grandma from Brooklyn.
I'm actually sparring because I'm going to make a comeback.
Speaking of Stucknut, Stucknut's in. He tweets, that was a great impression. Signed Parody Larry as Aaron Rodgers.
So yesterday was an awesome day in Green Bay, and my AKA Aaron, Mr. Rodgers, wants to tell you what went down in the neighborhood. It's a beautiful day in the Wisco Hood, a beautiful day for a beatdown. My knee is fine. The Bears will be mine. What a fabulous day for a clone stock, Mike and Caleb. And
that's not a good call. No.
Larry, the whole point of an impression is to change your voice to sound like somebody else, not keep the exact same voice. We got some real nut jobs calling this show. Got some real kooks calling this show. The whole point of the impression is to make yourself sound like somebody else and then not click into the same exact voice, Larry. You should know that, Larry. We are talking basketball, NBA. Joined right now by a good friend of the program. He is a national NBA writer for the Washington Post. Host of the Open Floor podcast. And when I say good friend of the program, what I really mean is jungle legend. Ben Golliver is my guest. Ben, good to have you back. How are you?
I'm great, Jim. How are you?
Good, good. Ben, lots to cover. Let me start, Ben, with James Harden. He had another 50-point triple-double last night. He's hit that mark four times in his career, which is pretty ridiculous. But then again, he makes it seem kind of common. Can you put this into perspective? How absurd is that stat line?
No, it's so crazy. We're probably going to have to name that line after him, right? I mean, everybody associated Oscar Robertson with the triple-doubles for years and years until Russell Westbrook came along. I mean, Harden is basically the only guy who can do it on a regular basis. It speaks to his role in their offense. Obviously, they look for him to score a lot, but he always has the ball in his hands. He's a great passer. He's got great vision, a great initiator. I mean, he's just a do-everything player on offense. It was great to see for Houston because they needed it. You know, I think to me, one of the big storylines of this early season has been Chris Paul struggling, not really being the same Chris Paul that we saw from last year. He's missed a little time with injury, but he's also just not shot the ball as well, committed a lot more turnovers than we're used to seeing, not really broken guys down off the dribble like we're used to seeing. And so that kind of raises the question of, you know, how good can this team be if Chris Paul isn't playing at 100%, right? But if James Harden is coming through with 50-point triple-doubles, maybe you don't worry quite as much.
So, Ben, is he not at 100%, or is he just not what he used to be?
You know, I think it's possible that he's entered a different stage in his career. If you look at all the numbers across the board, they're just down this year, and in some cases they're kind of at the lowest level he's ever had. He's a player who's been so consistent throughout his career that we're not even used to looking at slumps from him. This isn't a guy who just has a bad month, right? And I think some of the issues – people have been worried about, you know, his size as a point guard. A lot of times you get up to age 33 or age 34, it becomes more difficult to do what you want to do. And he's just looked off this year. And I don't think there's any reason to, you know, to beat around the bush. He was an incredible player for them last year, including in last year's playoffs before he got injured. And he just hasn't been that same guy.
Ben Golver, national NBA writer for The Washington Post, also host of the Open Floor podcast. So, Ben, let me ask you about the Raptors. They capped off a week where they finished off a 2-0 sweep of Golden State for the season. They did so without Kawhi Leonard. How do you explain the fact that they're this good this quickly with a starting five, which includes three guys that did not start for them last season?
No, they just have an unbelievable collective effort. You know what they remind me of, Jim, is like in high school, you know, when you're a senior, you know, your first week of senior year and you realize that you run the school now and you're looking around and like there's nobody to bully you. It's like, hey, it's your school. And then you get that chest all, you know, puffed up like, hey, this is our place. That's how they're feeling right now with LeBron James not in the Eastern Conference. I mean, their confidence and their self-belief and their togetherness is just through the roof because they're looking at the conference and saying, we can handle Boston, we can handle Philadelphia, we can handle Milwaukee, we can handle Indiana, and we don't have to worry about LeBron, you know, punching us from the playoffs for like the third or fourth time in recent years. And they've got a lot of talent there. I think when you look at a big picture, Masai Ujiri, their GM, deserves to be executive of the year. He had an unbelievable find to get a guy in Pascal Siakam, you know, late in the first round of the draft a couple of years ago. That guy has blossomed into, you know, probably the most improved player of this season. He's just been an incredible addition for them. And then, of course, the Kawhi trade. You could argue that both Kawhi Leonard and Danny Green have been better for Toronto than DeMar DeRozan's been for San Antonio. And DeRozan's been pretty good for San Antonio. So that trade has just worked out perfectly. And their new coach has hit the ground running. I think he's got a nice personality. The players seem to like him and respect his knowledge. I mean, to me, they've kind of solidified themselves in that favorite role of the Eastern Conference. Although I do like Milwaukee a lot. And I think, you know, of any playoff matchup that I want to see this year, it's Milwaukee versus Toronto in the Eastern Conference Finals.
All right, so if it comes to that, Ben, let me ask you something because you touched on this too. You've made the point in the past that the crowd in Toronto can be a double-edged sword in the sense that they're really, really intense, but in the past, when the team has hit a rough patch in a playoff game, how does the crowd react, and then how much impact does that have on the players on the floor?
Yeah, here's how I would frame it. You remember when Kawhi Leonard missed the free throw in the finals against the Heat, and it basically cost them the finals? Like, if he had made that free throw, they would have won the title. He escaped criticism almost completely because it was still Tim Duncan's team at that point, and Greg Popovich is, you know, kind of a big target too, and so people will nitpick on, you know Popovich's substitutions and all of that. If Kawhi Leonard were to miss a free throw for the Raptors that cost them the title, the entire city would melt. I mean, the fan base would melt down, and he would be subjected to so much criticism, it would almost blow your mind. And I think that just kind of explains the different role he has now in Toronto. He's the face of the whole thing. They're a very deep and talented team. They've done a really nice job of managing his minutes and giving him nights off and all those things. But once he hits the postseason, all of the scrutiny is going to be on him, not only because he's such a good player, but because he has a free agency decision coming up too, right? So if Toronto makes the second round, they start to look shaky. All of the talk is going to be about, hey, Kawhi, are you going to be staying? Are you going? I mean, he's going to be getting a new level of media attention that he's never really experienced before at any point during his San Antonio career. And we have no idea how he's going to handle it. I mean, usually what he does is he just kind of shuts himself away. And that makes sense during the regular season. But the playoffs are a different animal. And I think that's actually one of their biggest question marks. How does Kawhi Leonard hold up to the expectations from the fans in Toronto and to the bright media glare that's going to be waiting for him come playoff time?
Ben Golver joining us on the show. All right, Ben, so back out west. If you're the Warriors, are you at all concerned about how the season has gone so far? Or when you look at how little the Hamptons five have been on the floor together, do you feel like maybe they're just coasting right now?
Oh, it's an ultimate rope-a-dope, Jim. I know you're a boxing guy. I mean, I'm not really a boxing guy, but this is a rope-a-dope. Their two best lineups would be the Hamptons five and then, you know, basically DeMarcus Cousins with the other superstars, like the five all-star lineup, right? The Hamptons five has played 14 minutes together all season, and DeMarcus Cousins hasn't even taken the court yet, right? So, I mean, these guys are basically just playing with one hand tied behind their back, and they're still among the very best teams by record in the Western Conference. Now, that doesn't mean it's going to be completely smooth sailing. You know, KD's had some moods this year. So, you know, some weeks he looks just spectacular, looks like the MVP. Other weeks he looks like he's trying to find his way with Draymond. But to me, that this has been a team that's had no problem flipping the switch in the playoffs these last couple of years, and they were so much better than everyone else in the postseason last year that it's really hard for me to get, you know, concerned in any way about what's happening up there. Unless we get some sort of a report of like a locker room fist fight, I'm just going to say, hey, don't worry, check back in May.
All right. Now, Ben, you had a really interesting piece for the Post about LeBron and Dwayne Wade facing each other for the final time and what that means to Anthony Davis. If we have time, we can get to the Anthony Davis thing in a minute, but what do you make of the final game between LeBron and Wade?
No, it was so genuine. The emotions were so real. I mean, these are two guys who know how to milk a moment, right? Like, they're very comfortable in front of the
no
camera.
Doubt.
You could tell it really meant a lot to them this last game. And, you know, it was, you know, in some degree, it's kind of an honor just to be there. I mean, they have dominated the NBA for, you know, basically 15 years. Their draft class is going to go down as one of the greatest in NBA history. They had a real fun moment late where Dwayne Wade's trying to get his shot off and LeBron's all over him, you know, covering him, you know, real tightly on the perimeter. So it was a fun basketball moment, but it was also a really, you know, fun post game as well. I thought the biggest takeaway from the whole night was LeBron's, you know, it was pretty stunning admission. He said, look, if I wanted to get where I wanted to go in my career, which is to win a title, to win at the highest level, I needed Dwayne Wade. And when we hear LeBron talk about his own career, usually it's centered around LeBron. It's not centered around somebody else. So for him to give that level of credit to Dwayne Wade for sort of boosting him up into that champions category, I think says a lot. And that was my point with Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis needs a Dwayne Wade. He needs somebody who he can go play with, you know, coming up here either next year or the year after, who's going to be able to help turn him into a champion-level player. Because right now, Anthony Davis is already 25. Did you know Anthony Davis is older today than LeBron was when LeBron made the decision in 2010?
Wow.
I mean, we think of Anthony Davis as this young prodigy, right? The clock is ticking on this guy. It's time for him to win big.
That's actually a very stunning note right there. So do you think then that he knows this and he's looking to leave? And if that's the case, should the Pelicans try to trade him before he leaves on his own?
Yeah, well, I don't think it's a coincidence that he signs Rich Paul, right? I mean, if you want somebody to give you a blueprint for how to go from being the face of a franchise that's sort of 500 and kind of mediocre to turn yourself into this global icon, Rich Paul and LeBron and those guys are the exact right people to do it. To me, I think if you're the Pelicans, you've had a lot of time to build a team around him, right? If Anthony Davis comes to you next summer and politely says, look, guys, I'm not going to re-sign here. Please trade me. He kind of takes that Paul George approach. I know it would be very, very difficult for New Orleans to pull the trigger on the Anthony Davis trade, but I don't think that they would have any other option. Do you? I mean, if you watch him leave for nothing, you're completely stuck. I mean, you're already having trouble selling tickets down in New Orleans. You know, trying to sell tickets after losing Anthony Davis for nothing would be a very, very difficult bargain. So I do think, you know, we're getting to the point here where it's going to be the crossroads moment for that franchise. If they're not able to make real noise in this year's playoffs, I think everything is going to come to a head this summer.
Have to. And you have to move him, and you've got to get what you can for him if he's not going to stay and you can't build around him. Now, Ben, as I mentioned off the very top, you are now a national NBA writer for the Washington Post. I know how much you love being in Sports Illustrated and what a prestigious spot that was. And it was great for you. It was great for them. What's it been like writing for the Post so far?
Well, I'm just getting started. To be honest, I was going through orientation and the job interview process, all these things that you never really have to do when you're a writer. So it threw me off. I mean, they were asking me, hey, do you have any special skills? You know, and I was like, well, does jungle karma count? I mean, can I throw that in during the interview process? But no, it's been great. You know, I got a couple stories coming up here that people should look out for, some interesting features. I don't want to spoil them. But what I love about the Post, it's just the history of it. That's why I liked SI, too. I love being part of organizations that have been doing it for decades, that have really cared about the quality of their coverage and, you know, being at the important moments, you know, dating back to what, like the 50s, 60s, and 70s in terms of the sports departments. And, you know, to me, that's what it's all about, being part of that lineage and trying to carry the torch. It just gets me excited, gets me juiced.
Both are legendary spots. A national NBA writer for the Washington Post, also host of the Open Floor podcast, and a jungle legend, very, very good friend of the program, Ben Golver, my guest. Ben, great job. Congrats on that, and it's always good to have you on.
Oh, thanks for having me, Jim. Take care.
Don't look now, but the 5-win Phoenix Suns are in the fight of their lives. Except this fight is not on the court. This fight might be heading to court. I know generally that's pretty dry. You don't give a damn. You don't want to hear about that. And stop me if you've heard this before. A professional sports team with an outdated barn is demanding taxpayer money for a new barn or at least some renovations. And if they don't get what they want, they're going to U-Haul that team to a market who will bend over and give them what they want. Stroke the check on a brand new pile of bricks. It happens all the time. We've seen this playbook run over and over again. Ask Oakland, ask Seattle, ask San Diego, ask Seattle. Ask Oakland, ask St. Louis, ask Seattle, ask San Diego. Hey, did I say to ask San Diego? Those cities all have refused to go into their own pockets to build new stadiums, and now the Raiders are off to Vegas, the Rams are in L.A., the Chargers are in Carson, and the Sonics are in OKC. And now the Phoenix Suns are the next in line to flex this tried and true negotiation. Because reports are from the desert that team owner Robert Sarver wants $150 mil in public funding to update Talking Stick Arena. He needs four votes from the seven city council members to make that happen. The vote was supposed to happen earlier this week, but it was delayed until January because the majority flipped on Sarver and the deal was doomed to fail. But that did not stop the city from holding a meeting where concerned citizens can swing on by, crack open a mic, and then crack Bobby for trying to reach into their pocketbook. And if the Suns thought the NBA competition was tough, wait until they get a load of Phoenix woman. Not to be confused with Portland woman. Phoenix woman is a different breed. Phoenix woman is Greta Rogers. Not been around the block. I know better than to ever guess a woman's age. But since it is still an audio medium, let me go ahead and describe Greta. Greta is, how do I put this? And believe me, I don't want to get on the wrong side of her. Greta is somebody who may, I don't know, have vivid recall or recollection of the Calvin Coolidge era, if you see me working. So she pulls up to City Hall, and if she does, it might be like in a Ford Model A. That would not shock me. But age is simply a number. Because I'm telling you, man, her mind is sharp. Her flow is wicked. Check her act out as she brought down the absolute wrath on the entire city last night.
This is Chicago politics at its worst, and it has a very foul odor. We are not in the business of funding private enterprise. I don't care what it is. Private enterprise in a capitalist society, and I support it, is self-supporting by its own wise and diligent business practices. Mr. Sarver has done nothing to improve this team in the 14 years he's owned it. He's never funded or bought, paid for two or three key players, which make any professional sports team successful or on the road to success. He's so tight, he squeaks when he walks. And you have been negotiating with this kind of person? Shame on each and all of you. And upon you, Ed, I thought your principles were higher and better than this. They can support themselves or fail on their own lack of diligence. Don't do this to us again.
Greta. Conor McGregor Rogers, if you need her. Never has a city been named more appropriately because a phoenix is a bird that rose from the ashes, and I'm pretty sure that Greta Rogers just torched the entire 602 to the ground. Pick your favorite part from that clip. I dare you. Was it the Econ 101 lesson at the very top?
Private enterprise in a capitalist society, and I support it, is self-supporting by its own wise and diligent business practices.
Got that, slackers? Stop looking for a handout. Or was it the epic burn on Sarver for being a cheapskate?
He's so tight, he squeaks when he walks.
Or how about the personal shaming and singling out of that dude on the board named Ed?
Shame on each and all of you. And upon you, Ed, I thought your principles were higher and better than this.
Hey, Ed, I thought you were better than this. But you're not. Would somebody please point Ed? Ed and Robert Sarver to a support group for people who just got laid the hell out by Greta Rogers. I got to tell you something, that's better and more entertaining than anything the Suns have put on the floor in the past decade or so. And while I never want to see a fan base lose their team, I'm not going to lie. I want to see this fight drag out as long as possible. As long as Phoenix woman Greta Rogers is involved. She's awesome. What a damn good citizen. What a damn good human being. She rules. Now, I would not be doing my job as an impartial broadcaster if I did not present the other side of this, because Robert Sarver did record a video statement and then drop it on the Suns' official Twitter handle yesterday.
The Phoenix Suns are not leaving Phoenix. I'm 100% committed and have been for the last 4 years to find a solution to keep them in downtown Phoenix where they belong. I am a strong proponent, as evidenced by the term sheet that I signed last week, that we should renovate the Talking Stick Resort Arena and once again restore it to a world-class facility. I am 100% all in keeping this team right here where we stand. And I want to make sure that that message comes across crystal clear to every one of you. Thank you.
Yeah, I hope so. Either the five-win Suns are here to stay, or that video, unlike Greta Rogers, is going to age terribly. Only time will tell. But one thing we know is this. The city of Phoenix is not going to take this lying down. Not as long as Greta Rogers is still standing upright. Get your Neckos and your butterscotch candy ready. It's freaking on. You got that, Sarver. You got that, Ed.
Shame on each and all of you. And upon you, Ed, I thought your principles were higher and better than this.
You got that, Ed? You got that, Sarver? Man, do not get on the wrong side of Phoenix woman. Greta. With fire.
He's so tight, he squeaks when he walks.
Cheapskate. Hey, Ed, you're better than that, or at least I thought you were. Hey, Rome, get Greta in the smack off. She has the best smack of any lady clone. Rack her. John in Huntington Beach, wore all the lady clones wanting me. All right, we are joined right now by the UFC former middleweight champion. One of the best to ever do it, 34-8-0. His career includes the longest title reign in UFC history, 2,457 days, a record 16 consecutive wins, most finishes in UFC title fights, 9, the most knockdowns in UFC history, 17. He is facing Israel Adesanya at UFC 234 in February. My guest is Anderson Silva. Anderson, great to have you on the show. How are you?
I'm good, Ms. Friend. Thanks for your time. Thank you so much.
Anderson, thank you for your time. Let me ask you, before we get to UFC 234 and your upcoming fight, bring me up to date. How is life for Anderson Silva these days?
So, yeah, my life is amazing. I'm very excited to be back to fight, and especially when I have this big challenge in my life, you know, my personal life. I'm very happy. I'm very excited. And I need to say thank you for all my fans in the world. And I'm very lucky. You know, I need to say thank you for God, because, you know, back to doing something special for the people, that's amazing.
Anderson Silva's my guest. You know, Anderson, training obviously is hard work. Fighting is hard work. There are a lot of things that you could be doing with your time, such as the fact that you've got your spider kick gym here in Los Angeles. So what is it that keeps you fighting and putting in that work?
So, I have a great team for help me. And the spider kick is my gym now. And that's an amazing space for me, and is a part of my legacy. And I try to do something special in the spider kick for the people, for my students. And my focus now is just giving everything back for people, how much these people give me. And yeah, the spider kick is amazing, Jim. Is a focus for health and illness. The people come healthy. It's not about fighting. It's about respect your body, respect your mind, and coming better and better, you know?
Anderson Silva joining us. I do understand that. You know, in terms of legacy, part of that legacy is you're regarded by many as the greatest fighter in UFC history. What does that honor mean to you?
So, yeah, you know, about fight, about UFC, I'm saying this game for a long, long time in my life. When I talk to my family about fighting, my family talk to me and say, Dad, you need to stop. You don't need to prove nothing for any else, you know. But that's me. I'm a fighter, you know. That's me. I love fight. I love this sport. And I try to do my best, you know, because I know this is very important for me now for continue my legacy, you know. Because I feeling better and better every day. I train every day. And, you know, fight is just one point, you know. It's not about fighting. It's about how much I keep doing challenge by yourself, my mind and my body, and working my technique and martial arts skills. You know, that's more important for me.
We're talking to Anderson Silva. All right, so you've got 234 coming up, and you're going to fight Israel Adesanya. Now, he mentions that he grew up idolizing you. He grew up and modeled himself after you. He says he even knows you better than you know yourself. What's your reaction when you hear that?
Yeah, it's, you know, I'm very happy, and it's my honor to fight for the new talent in UFC. You know, I respect all fighters, you know. And fight for this young fighter, especially Israel, is very important, you know, for me, because that's the timing to challenge my for challenge my skills, all my experience in this sport, and try to do my best. You know, I'm very happy. Is an honor to fight for Israel. I training hard. All my team keep straight focus for this fight. And, you know, it's nothing new one, but it's good challenge. You know, especially because Israel is young and people talk a lot because I'm going to fight for 2 years and Israel come beating everybody in UFC is a new challenge. It's a new promise in UFC. But that's good because I'm so, so happy. I'm so happy because that's the amazing, amazing opportunity for Israel. And I do the show for my fans, you know. I do a special show for my fans.
Anderson Silva joining us on the program. All right, so what I'm hearing from you is it's a challenge. You still love the sport. It's more than a sport. You feel great physically, and you've got this great opportunity. Dana White has said that if you win that fight, if you win at UFC 234, that you will get a shot at the title. At this point in your career, what would it mean to you to get another title shot?
So that's the – when I Dana come to talk to me about this fight – that's the point I accept the fight, because Dana say, okay, Anderson, I give to you this fight, you win, I give one more chance for you fight for the belt. And I say, okay, that's good, you know, that's good for my mind, it's good challenge. My focus now is my fight for Israel, because that's the great challenge for me. But in the next step, I go to fight for the title belt, you know. And, you know, I don't have nothing for lose except in my time. And I try to do my time better and better, you know, and do everything for my fans, especially in Australia, because I have a lot of fans in Australia, and I know the people love this sport, and I try to do my best.
You know, Anderson, I'll tell you what the fans would love. Anderson Silva's my guest. What the fans would love, and I understand that you've got this fight against Adesanya first, and with respect to that, but there's been talk about a fight between you and GSP, a couple of legends, two of the best to ever do it, to step in the cage and get it on. The fans would love that. I've got to think that you would love that. Do you think that GSP wants to fight you?
don't know, you know, because for a long time, Dana talking about this fight and George never accept the fight. But I'm here. I'm here for doing special fight, especially when I have good legends in this sport, the same George St. Pierre, the same all different fighters, you know. And Conor McGregor challenged me, and I accept the challenge. I'm waiting for Conor and all the fights, because that's more important for me now. Super fights, because is the more important for the fans now. Super fights, super challenge, and that's the fight for me is very interesting. Conor, George St. Pierre, and in my category, of course, Israel now is my big challenge. And I try to do my best. Anytime I try to do my best, I try to give everything back to my fans.
Anderson Silva, my guest, you mentioned Conor McGregor. Now we're talking. Conor McGregor. So what do you make of McGregor as a fighter and as a person?
So I don't have nothing for talking about Conor. I believe in Conor is the great fighter. Have a beautiful family, you know, and is a businessman. You know, this game is you have a business, and you need you using the talk show for entertaining people. You know, but that's Conor. You know, I respect, and let's go see. The future is long, is big. Let's go see.
Anderson Silva's my guest. Yeah, I get a kick out of Conor. Anderson, I really like the guy a lot. I don't like everything he's done, of course, but we could say that about anybody. But I think he's been amazing for the sport. Let me ask you before you go, because if we go back a few years, you stepped in on very short notice to fight Daniel Cormier, and you did so above your weight class when John Jones was unavailable. Most guys in your situation with your career would never have taken that fight. Why did you take that fight?
So I take the fight because, you know, first of all, when I talk to this fight, the people say, you crazy, because I have a series in Brazil for 2 months, 3 months. And I say, you know, I go take this fight. I go take because I need you feeling my body and my mind, because I'm a fighter, but I need to check this staying in my heart, staying in my mind. And when I take this fight, I take because I know is I'm a partner to UFC, and I try to help Dana White for doing the show for my fans, you know, respect my fans, respect the fighters, especially my fans. That's the point I accept the fight for Daniel Cormier.
One of the best to ever do it, and if you look at that resume, maybe in fact the best to ever do it, back in action at UFC 234. Anderson Silva is going to fight Israel Adesanya. Anderson, really nice to have you on the program finally. I enjoyed the visit. Good luck in that fight. I hope you and I can talk again soon.
Absolutely. I need to say thank you so much for your time, my friend.
Alvy, how are you feeling about things? Alvin. Has the week that was. Let's find out how good of a week this was or how bad of a week this was. And the only way to find out is to check with Alvy. What's cracking? Welcome to the jungle. My name is Jim Rome. Nice to have you here. So what did you get up to? What did you get done? And what a wild, wild weekend in the NFL. Let me start right there. Go ahead and roll it.
Yeah! I was just like, look, I got some Miami's running around. Oh, look out!
Gronk should not have been out there. It's almost not even his fault.
Every time we practice it, it's for the Hail Mary. But
translate that for you. How was I doing out there?
Sucked.
And even Tannehill was looking out over the field and saying, oh, hell yeah.
Gronk's on the field. We got this.
If he was going to be on the field, why did he switch out his cleats for roller skates?
He can't. Another interception. Luke DeMarco, the
fucking ball hawks.
Put some respect on it. Statement game, statement win. The Windy City has a football team now.
I am joined by Bob Myers.
What do you do when you failed? I've failed. To get to where you are in your career, you failed, right? So what? But how did you handle that failure? As a leader in any organization, this is why you have the role you have, is to take on that.
And George Dyer, every time somebody got blocked, or like Mike Shanahan was lobster red after we gave up 30-56, George used to yell, hey!
The other guys get paid too!
Bill Peters joining us.
And then we took in the Calgary Stampede for a day or two, so.
What was the Calgary Stampede like?
World class, great event.
The Calgary Stampede, that's like Madison Square Garden for rodeo. Boozing, seducing, rodeo producing. Out.
I got down and I got paid.
$15 bet paid $700, dude.
Oh, dude. No wonder your day turned.
It's a touchdown! Justin Coleman!
The Legion of Boom had been blown up and it looked like gum-chomping Peter Carroll had lost what was left of that locker room.
Legion of Boom!
The Hawks are a playoff lock and that is not a team that I would want to run into right now. We're talking to Frank Gore.
I'm good. What's up, Jim, man? No, it's been a little minute, man. I'm doing great, dude.
What's it mean to you to be back in Miami playing for the Dolphins? What's that like?
I love it, man. The fans been showing me so much love. Man, you know, I'm hating.
The ruling on the field stands.
The referee's saying that the ruling on the field stands. Or the fact that they are out of their challenges for the rest of the game.
Email.
Aaron, I guarantee that Kelly Clarkson has never ordered a hamburger with a burrito. Buzz Williams, Virginia Tech head basketball coach, joining us.
It's your responsibility to give away to others. Where's the next Jim Rome? We need to produce 10 more Jim Romes, and we need all 10 of them to be better than the original.
LeBron, oh, look out. Throws off.
Except LeBron did not just kind of throw the ball off Olenek. He rifled it off him. More accurately, he fired it into his face.
He fired.
And wore Ray's face needing Scrotox more than his scrotum.
Scrotox. Is that a thing? Is that a medicine? Is that an injection?
Chucky needs a strong GM because he sucks at it.
I'm home alone. Regards, Macaulay. Alvy, sound the alarm. That's fine, Alvin. Here, I'll be, play the Toby call. Oh, okay.
Drop the towel. I look over there.
Don't do that.
He gets it off the referee. It goes in, but that will not count.
I'll tell you something. The NHL does not get nearly enough credit for its technology.
You hear the ambient sound?
You can hear the referee screaming in anguish.
You rarely see something like this happen.
The baddest rock star on the planet looks like a middle-aged biker chick, and there's more moisture in the Sahara than there is in both dudes' faces combined. Rack me, I'm out. Darius Leonard is my guest. Darius, great to have you on. How are you?
I'm blessed. How are you?
Good. Great, man.
El Cajon!
La Mesa!
Mission Valley!
Why are my lines not lit like a freaking Christmas tree?
Charger fan!
You're now Raider fan!
Bet you never thought that would happen!
We're gonna find out about which one of those football clubs wants to hit each other harder long.
Jimmy, give my best to DA, who is literally smiling ear to ear these days.
You're what we call wallpaper. Radio wallpaper. It's ugly, out of date, but always there to cover up a crack in the drywall.
Twitter!
How DA's ass tastes.
Tell me how my ass tastes.
Was DA finishing off carne asada burritos in one bite?
Jarvis Landry joining us.
Man, it was a hell of a throw, man. It was a hell of a throw. You know, between two defenders, like I told Baker, man, I just fell in love with the ball.
Can send in their family Christmas photo with them by themselves or their friends or their pets, whatever. Just send
us. That sure was politically correct. Boy, you sure handled that.
I'm Ray, and I quit smoking.
I did not look at that commercial and think to myself, take. I can't wait to get in on Monday and talk about Ray Liotta's face.
I mean, have you seen this guy's face?
Caught! It's good!
KC, way to have a man within 50 feet of him.
You didn't come to the top. You came to win.
Hear me right now. Understand me later. The road to Atlanta could very well go through Carson. Take that, haters. Sugar Ray Leonard is my guest. It's great to have you on the show. Ray, how are you?
Jim, how long has it been?
Ben Golliver is my guest.
And they were asking me, hey, do you have any special skills, you know? And I was like, well, does jungle karma count? I mean, can I throw that in?
Karma. My name is Mike Nutt Tyson.
This is absolutely incredible. No way, Mike.
Well, I'm actually...
And I thought your principles were higher and better.
Thank you, my friend.
And now fisticuffs.
Yo mama. In bulk. Yo.
Yo.
Thanks for having me, Jim.
Pitch it.
Buffalo Wild Wings on Sunday.
You like that?
You like that?
I need to take a picture with you.
Give me my show.
I work for Greg Popovich.
Naked Grandma.
Merry Kaliki Maka.
Merry Christmas.
I always get to talk to you, brother.
Superchargers.
Outro. Good night now.